to go. Taco to
and a big queue.
Taco to go.
Taco to go. Trip Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big Q, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't lose.
Taco to go, taco to.
This deal legit.
Taco to go, taco.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go. $2.99.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Good to be with you. Text message, been rewatching Texans games from last season. Good for you, Texter. Get ready for the season. Get excited. Texter says, Seth, do you guys think the Texans have done enough in the offseason to replace a healthy Diggs and Dell? Yeah. Man, those two were really good when they were playing. We'll see. Body-wise, yeah, they have. I don't know if the bodies are going to be as good.
I think the Christian Kirk trade is a little under-heralded for what it could provide. I think Christian Kirk is a lot of his last few seasons have been, one, impressive. His first year in Jacksonville was impressive. But then with Calvin Ridley becoming the main guy and then Brian Thomas after that, and then with Christian Kirk having been injured a good chunk these last 2 years, I don't think there's more upside there than I think people might think or realize.
Yeah.
And if only just to give CJ that quick option in the quick passing game. They wouldn't have that without Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell nearly as much. So they've partially replaced it with that. And then there's just a huge unknown is whether the draft picks work out or not.
Yeah.
If Higgins and Noel are both awesome, then yep, there's your answer. They did enough. If they don't work out, then obviously they didn't do enough. That's the magic of the draft.
It is. Yeah. That's my biggest concern. You touched on it there. My biggest concern with this receiving core is Christian Kirk's recent history with health issues and Nico Collins' history with health issues across the course of his career in the NFL so far. You can't have a pulled hamstring and miss six games. I'm not throwing shade at Nico, like he's not trying to pull a hamstring, but like they can't have Nico Collins missing for six games again this year if they're trying to get to have the type of regular season they want to have the type of postseason they want to.
And remember, too, that they had three good receivers last year, but it didn't yield a really good passing game.
Yeah.
There was way more to it than, oh, we've got these really good receivers, here we go. Like, that was pretty obvious. That was played out last year. Nico kept producing despite seeing cover two all the time, despite teams specifically trying to take away the deep ball. He did keep producing. But you can have the total can be greater than the sum of its parts with this offense, even if you don't have the same caliber of wide receiver across the board. The Texans were in second and long and third and long just way too often last year because of poor execution on first down. A lot of that was in the run game. You don't have to have an awesome run game, but you got to at least not be routinely getting stuffed at the line of scrimmage, because that makes it really, really hard to convert that set of downs. So just having a credible rushing attack, it's not the 1980s. I'm not saying that you got to be, but you've got to have a credible rushing attack to offset when teams are just specifically trying to take away the deep ball. That's where Kaylee really ends up being the biggest X factor in all that.
By the way, according to Aaron Wilson, Joe Mixon is still recovering, I guess. He's not 100%, so Damian Pierce is going to get a bump up here at OTAs when they're running things out there. So we'll see. I don't know how much of an impression you can make in OTAs that maps to getting more action in the regular season, but it's worth noting Joe Mixon, at least for now, is still recovering from some, what I'm guessing is just some work that was done in the offseason here.
Well, if anything, maybe it's that there'll be more quality reps for Damian Pierce to get ingrained in this offense.
Yeah.
And that's one of the huge wild cards is, all right, we saw a much different version of Damian Pierce playing for Pep Hamilton than we did these last couple of years playing for Bobby Slowick. Yep. And Kaylee is very much about tailoring the offense to the strengths of his players. So I think they're gonna probably, if they still really believe in Damian Pierce and the potential there, they're hopefully going to utilize him better.
Here are the odds via FanDuel on individual receivers to record 1,250 yards receiving or more this year. How far down do we go till we get to Nico Collins? Ja'Marr Chase is number one at nearly 1-2. He's minus 195. So you got to bet $195 just to win 100. Ja'Marr Chase is by far and away the leader on this odds board. Justin Jefferson is number two at minus 115, so around a coin flip, a little greater than a coin flip. He'd probably be close to Ja'Marr Chase if his quarterback situation were a little less mysterious. I think it's going to be J.J. McCarthy. It's just J.J. McCarthy's never taken a snap in the NFL yet. Puka Nacua is number three on this list at plus 105, so you risk 100 to win 105. That's as close to a coin flip as you can get. CeeDee Lamb is next at plus 120. And then next, Nico Collins and Brian Thomas Jr. tied at plus 135. If you bet over 1,250 yards receiving for Nico Collins, you get $135 for risking 100. This to me, Seth, if you were to bet this is purely a bet on health. If Nico Collins is healthy for 17 games, he's getting 1,250 yards.
Since pairing up with C.J. Stroud, he's played at a 1,300-plus yard pace for both those seasons.
Yes.
He did 1,297 yards on 15 games in 2023, and then last year he would have been on pace for probably 1,450 yards or so, but he only played 12 games.
Right.
I think it's pretty clear cut. If he stays healthy, yes, he'll be over 1,200
yards. You're
betting
on his hamstrings is what you're betting on, right?
How confident do you feel for a guy that's never played more than 15 games in a season?
Yeah,
Is he going to stay healthy for all season long?
It's a stay away for me. It's a stay away for me because it's one thing if Nico Collins is having health issues and then this is the offseason where he makes tweaks to his regimen, and he probably will. Like I would if I missed five games with a hamstring injury. But that was the big news coming into his first big year that he had with CJ in 2023, was that was the offseason where he had really gone back and assessed how he was going about things, because he was injured quite a bit his first 2 years in the league. You know, he's been through this process before, and he's still dealing with some kind of nagging injuries. He may just be one of those guys that's going to miss two or three games every year. That's, you know, based on style of play, just, you know, your body, different bodies are work differently, whatever the case may be. Brian Thomas Jr. being there plus 135 is a little scary. How do you think that the combination of Travis Hunter, Brian Thomas Jr., and Liam Cohen, what's your concern level that Trevor Lawrence gets to the level that he's really only hit for like a seven-game period at the end of 2022 in his career?
It's still not that high.
Yeah.
I think that Liam Cohen, I could see Liam Cohen doing some things differently with him early in the season. They're going to look really, really good. But Trevor Lawrence just has still never demonstrated that, like, a bona fide, genuine NFL quarterback. He hasn't demonstrated that he can really get through his progression or that he won't get rattled after his first option is gone. And that's by and large how defenses talk about him. He's a first-read quarterback. So what usually happens with guys like that who still do have physical skills is a new coordinator comes in. Hey, we got a few different packages here. Oh, look, we're going to take the league by storm. And it looks awesome for a few games. And then defenses start to realize what you're doing and how you're working it. So I'm a little bit more optimistic just because he's got more raw physical talent around him. And there's a little bit of an ambush quality with Liam Cohen, but I wouldn't be. It's not like I feel like this is the year that all of a sudden Trevor Lawrence breaks out.
No, the Texans get them in week three. It's interesting that of these receivers that are on this odds board, again, it's receivers that odds on receivers going over 1,250 yards receiving from FanDuel here. Puka Nacua, three. Brian Thomas Jr. tied with Nico Collins at fifth. You see those two guys in the first 3 weeks of the season. You know, like that's one of the things I'm kind of excited about early on that's sort of underplayed right now, because you always look at quarterbacks and different things. And in that Rams game, the matchup between the Texans' newfangled offensive line versus the Rams' defensive line is getting a ton of attention, as it should. But Derek Stingley Jr. and Kamari Lassiter in the first 3 weeks of the season going against Puka Nacua and Davante Adams.
Yeah.
Week two, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, who's coming off injury, but they also drafted Tampa Bay, drafted Emeka Ibuka. And then in week three, you get Jacksonville with Brian Thomas Jr. and Travis Hunter. Like, those are, right out of the chute, those are three, like, really saucy corner versus wide receiver matchups.
Those are really good. And it's week three for Travis Hunter, so there will already be a storyline by that point.
Yeah.
He will one of two things. He will either be taking the league by storm or he'll be a vast disappointment. And it'll only be 3 weeks in. So either well, yeah. opinion is wrong. It could be the right opinion, but for the wrong reasons. Yeah. But, yeah, I feel like that Jacksonville game has the potential to actually have some clout and feel like the most emotionally charged Jaguars game, just because Travis Hunter is a guy that his name is big enough that if he is doing really well in those first couple games, there's going to be a lot of people talking about him, even though he plays for Jacksonville. So that'll be a lot of fun.
I think the league wants him. When I say the league, I mean like, you know, the people whose livelihoods are based on the entertainment value of football. Those people. Yeah. I think they want this Travis Hunter thing to work out. Like, he would be, especially if he's playing both ways, I mean, highly marketable.
Oh, you know? There's a video I saw of him walking through some apartment complex in Jacksonville, and he sees some kid working out in his backyard. And it was it was in these condos or apartments, you know, so his backyard is just his little sliver of the hill that goes down to the retention pond.
Yeah.
And he's got a chair out, and he's practicing his pass rush moves against a chair.
Yep.
Travis Hunter walks up to him, and oh my gosh.
Yeah. They took pictures.
Travis Hunter seems like he seems like a Will Anderson type of personality.
He seems like a very willing man of the people right now. Travis Hunter does. So
it's gonna be a tough 5 reasons I hate Travis Hunter that week. But well, we're gonna start working on it now.
Okay. We better start working on it now. Yeah. He is hard to hate. He had a big wedding this past weekend too. I think I can't remember if it was this weekend or the previous weekend, but he gave his new wife G-Wagon, like a $200,000 G-Wagon. Like it had a huge...
And he hasn't even touched his NFL money yet.
Yeah.
That's all NIL. That came from his NIL money. That wasn't even, you know, he hasn't gotten his actual guaranteed money yet.
He probably might have a deal with Mercedes of Boulder or something like that. And that was their wedding gift to them. Who the hell knows? But
I hope he's known this girl a while. This wasn't like a stripper that he met on draft night.
No.
Right?
I think they've been together. Been together for a little while. That does happen.
There was Curtis Enos. I remember he got drafted. Oh, boy.
Wasn't he the one that had the agent that was a little out there?
It was a guy
kind
who
of a
was
religious
kind
aspect
of like,
to it.
He was there was a religious like cult like aspect to it. And they talked him into like the doing the right thing and marrying this woman who, and it was, remember they gave him a deal that was like had very few guarantees and everything.
Dude.
It ended up being one of the worst deals ever. They ruined his life. Because he got injured and hardly ever played after that. And like he had gotten a deal that was, I don't think it would even be allowed by today's CBA.
He was a top five pick. Him and Ricky Williams, man. Because Ricky Williams did the same thing. He had Master P as his agent and did one. The Saints trade their entire draft to get Ricky Williams. And Ricky Williams comes in and does them the solid of doing an almost entirely incentive-based contract.
Master P at least knew what he was doing and was an actual businessman. The guy that was advising all of these athletes, because I knew a few of them, like he had been like sanctioned by the Securities and Exchange Commission. But he was cloaking it in this God's purpose is why I'm helping you and everything. And they tithed him the money. They would tithe their money to a guy who was also in charge of their finances.
Yeah.
It was sketchy as hell.
That's sketchier. In some ways, I think the Master P thing is worse, though, because to your point, he was actually a businessman. He was in the music industry, and he's in there and negotiating a horrible deal for, like, same type of deal for Ricky Williams, probably minus the tithing. I don't think Ricky Williams was tithing to Master P or anything like that.
Right,
But these incentive-based contracts, and Ricky Williams had to get them to rip that up and get traded to Miami to get out of that thing. A lot of texts coming in here, and we'll hit those. Good point on Nico. Nico really only played like 10 games because he played a quarter of the Bills game and then just one series in the final game of the year with the Titans to get over 1,000 yards. So, that's what I'm saying. Like, Nico Collins, in 17 games, Nico Collins is a 1,500-yard receiver if he's playing 17 games on this team. I don't care they got Christian Kirk and they drafted a couple of guys. Like, when the bleep is coming down, C.J. Stroud is by and large looking for one guy, and that's Nico Collins. You know, like that's his go. He's looking for other guys, but like that's his go-to guy. You know, that is he's
so they
the
just
man.
Gotta, all they have to do is the minor detail of his hamstrings falling off the bone every now and then.
That's it.
Keep your hamstrings from falling off the bone, okay?
And you're fine. Yeah. Someone says, "Hey, Seth." So basically, the agent was Jack Easterby.
it was one of those man. Like there was when I was in Jacksonville, they had a lot of guys who were born again, and incredibly enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
And like were gung-ho into whoever was leading them by the arm. And it was sad because a lot of guys lost a lot of money by somebody that just, you know, that said everything that they wanted to hear. Because they were guys that were genuinely, you know, they were genuine in their piety and their mission and all this.
Yeah.
And it just took this. Yeah. I don't want to throw Jack Easterby into the same category
of
crime. But, it was a charismatic dude that just led them right off the depths, into the depths, yeah.
Thank you guys so much for leaving Jose Altuve off the circle of trust he went off this weekend. Don't worry, we pointed that out on Monday. But we're happy to point it out again right now, that Jose Altuve's 8-for-17 weekend was largely because of me and Seth.
That's determined by science.
Yeah.
There's a word, as I understand it, correlation equals causation.
Mm-hmm.
That's my methodology.
Yep.
And yes, we boot him out of the circle of trust, and all of a sudden he's a 500 hitter again.
That's okay? It, man. Yeah. I'm glad it was worth it. You know, like that was people, we can't diminish how painful that was to do. Like you and I had to, we stewed over this thing. Like
it's
that was
something,
hard.
It's a classic. Like this hurts me more than it hurts you. Okay?
Correct.
I'm doing what I have to do as a parent or sports radio host is just deliver the cold, harsh truths. And then Altuve got in the cage and figured out a few things. And then there you go.
Okay. Someone says
probably back in the circle of trust the next time.
Probably. We'll see. Oh, Seth, please look into Travis Hunter's wife. It's going to be tragic. Travis Hunter's wife, then girlfriend, was caught several times cheating on him, and he married her with no prenup. This is a texter. I don't know if that's true. I'm guessing
Sean, that text is correlated to a cause I want to believe.
we
have scientific proof.
I saw the headlines of the no prenup over the weekend, and I'm like, are we doing this really? We're looking. This is a headline that Travis Hunter married her with no prenup. I'm guessing a lot of athletes do that. Maybe not always the wisest thing to do, but I didn't read the article. I only saw the headline about the no prenup.
As far as I understood it at the time, because there was something last summer, I can't remember when it was, this old video of her. If I remember correctly, it was an old video of her from before she was with Travis Hunter.
Okay.
But as the internet tends to do, there was a story and people ran with it.
It got conflated.
Just like that poor girl. Remember that that poor undergraduate at where? Georgia? Who somebody
Ole
created
Miss.
A story about
Ole Miss.
Her sleeping with her boyfriend's father.
Yes.
It was complete fabrication.
Yes.
But it got blown way up and all of a sudden this woman's dad is getting harassed and she's pursuing
legal recourse against Pat McAfee and a bunch of other people. Bunch of other shows, not this one because we have integrity, but other shows that took that story and just ran with it. Like she's lawyering up on that. It's from what I saw at least like a month or so ago.
But now we as devout, you know, we have got the Texans' best interest in mind.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of hope that that's not all blown up.
The Travis Hunter thing,
whatever the smoke is. Yeah.
Oh, dude, anything that drags his game down, I'm here for. At least in week three, you know. He can have good games outside of that if he wants to, but not week three, man. No. No, we will be sending you, Travis, we will be posting videos of that video of your girlfriend and tagging you on it. Yes. Distraction. Let's see.
So where do you stand on prenups? We'll steadily move into more difficult topics
to talk about. No,
abortion at 9:40 today, everybody.
I'm literally not even thinking, like, my situation, it would have made more sense for my ex-wife to have a prenup than me, just based on her family background. Like, she comes from a very wealthy family. You know, I don't.
Like for professional athletes, it's a dicey one. I almost feel like if I'm advising a young man, I would tell him, right now, your policy is, based on the agreement you have with the people who work for you, is that you'll sign a prenup with anybody you meet and whomever you marry.
Yes.
It's a rule right from the beginning. I don't even have a control over this. If you can actually say that without lying, like you somehow create the situation that like, listen, I don't know when you're ever, it's easier for me to say it.
I absolutely think there's situations where they 1,000% make sense. Let me put it that way. You know, like I don't blanket say everybody should get one because I don't think everybody should get one. If you've been with somebody for 10, 15 years,
right.
But if it's somebody you met fairly recently or somebody who's got a history or, the income is severely lopsided to where outsiders looking in go, this looks a little strange. Like,
yeah.
If I were Bill Belichick, for example, and they were to get married, I would get a prenup. You know what I mean? Like, that looks like a situation where having something in place might make a lot of sense. I don't know what the division laws are in Massachusetts upon divorce, if it's just a generic 50-50 split, no matter how long you've been with somebody. But if I were Belichick, I'm not saying the relationship isn't built on a strong foundation, just based on the empirical things of how long the relationship has been or how short it's been, maybe.
Yeah.
The age difference, because we see that from time. I would just, based on those statistics, get the prenup. I'm not saying you're not in love, but I would get the prenup.
Women love when you bring a spreadsheet into the situation.
Oh,
I've noticed. That's especially if you do it right after the proposal.
Yeah. You want me to get out the Excel? Yeah.
I don't know. I never felt the need for one because I felt like I don't know. I don't commit to many things because I want to honor my commitments.
Yeah.
So it was for me personally. Plus, when we first got engaged, I wasn't making like huge money.
Right.
So it wasn't like, I don't know. I never really thought too much about it. It wasn't. And I think most people that knew me personally knew that that Brandy wasn't going to be the one to screw things up or
be
a gold digger or anything.
So you
like
didn't
that.
Have to pull out some paperwork once you got your first like big second contract or whatever. Like, okay, now seems like
hey,
a good time.
Hey, we need to renegotiate.
Now seems to be a good time to get this
right,
put together.
Right, yeah. Then I remember after I tore my hamstring off my pelvis and I couldn't bend over for like 6 weeks after the surgery, I was wearing a brace that kept my body locked completely.
Yeah.
And my wife had to help me with a lot of like very basic tasks.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah.
There's bodily tasks.
And she was stooped down trying to clean up whatever mess I had made. I was like, yep, you earned it, sweetie.
Yeah.
So I told her. I'm gonna go revise the spreadsheet after this.
When you knocked a plate on the floor is what you're talking about, right?
Like
the mess that you made.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Another texter. It's very true. Several wise, very much true about Travis Hunter. He definitely should have had a prenup.
Oh, he's screwed. Oh, boy. Oh, nothing like a small town like Jacksonville, too. Yeah, you'll never, don't worry. Yeah, she'll keep everything.
Oh, boy. Okay, this is an actual football take on Travis Hunter, though. Travis is going to get wrecked by every player in the league. He is tiny. I do think he's going to have a tough time holding up to what they are forecasting him doing.
Because they're talking about him redefining the rules of football and life, which means that they want him to play both ways.
Yeah.
And he is slender. He's really slender.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's built for that.
Yeah.
Like heavy usage on both sides of the ball. And he is. He's very unpolished as a route runner.
Yep.
And I think that's no small thing. Now, some guys adapt to it really well. Other guys never make that transition. So, the novelty act of it is that, okay, he played 120 snaps a game, but you got to kind of look at, all right, if he was only playing wide receiver, would he have been more polished? Would he have looked better? That's a big projection.
Yeah.
And he's not quite there yet in terms of running like an NFL wide receiver, but lots of guys come into the league like that and they figure a lot out in the course of
a few months. He's going to get banged up, and I think the first time he gets banged up doing something on one side of the ball, we had a texter text us in not that long ago, and it perfectly encapsulated how I feel about this Travis Hunter thing, is he's going to get hurt doing something that's outside of the purview of just a regular NFL player. Like if his main side of the ball is receiver, I just feel like the karma is in place where something's going to happen on the defensive side. And from there, I cannot wait for the magnificent Gladstone to have to address his comments from that opening press conference with Travis Hunter, where he made it sound like this guy was going to change. Didn't make it sound. Literally said he's going to change the sport of football as we know
it. Gladstone came out there like he was a Silicon Valley CEO who's trying to talk about redefining the way we think about technology.
How we're going to move.
And just like trying to get clicks mostly, or just notoriety, or position yourself as the brash, young, aggressive, whatever. Yeah. He sounded like a pitch man.
Yeah.
More so than a guy. It didn't sound like a football guy at all. And I mean that in the best sense of the word. Term football guy,
right?
Like he was just getting out way ahead of himself.
It was crazy, man. It was crazy. I didn't think it was possible for somebody to introduce a player and try like introducing a player and making it all about him, all about like not about the player, about himself. Like Gladstone, Gladstone was talking, he certainly was talking about Travis Hunter, but when he got talking about what this pick meant for the organization, like, this is a symbol of how we're going to move. I'm like, okay, so this is about you, basically, right? Like, yeah. this press conference is way more about you, Gladstone.
That'll be fun now. And also, remember, if we're talking about that, the Jaguars have suffered a notable injury or two at the hands of the Texans defense. This Texans defense, which isn't afraid to toe the line, sometimes step over it.
Oh, yeah.
Who will be going up against the guy who's capable of playing 120 snaps per game. Welcome to the NFL. To the non-Big 12, Travis Hunter. This will be fun. This will be a good time.
They box jumped over it last year against the Jags. Aziz. Oh, man.
Taco to go. Taco to
and a big Q.
Taco to go.
Taco to go.
We just review.
Quick Trip Taco, just $2.99. Comes with a big Q. This deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose.
Taco to go. Taco to.
This deal legit.
Taco to go. Taco.
Only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go. Taco to go. Taco to go.
$2.99.
Taco to go. And Travis has a similar body type to Tank Dell. He does. They are skinny.
I'm glad that texter brought it up. That's probably under discussed. Is you wonder, okay, physiologically, can a guy do this? Can a guy do that? And just the biggest and most glaring part of it is, can this guy? Yes, he's got great endurance.
Yeah.
So do marathon runners. You know what marathon runners don't endure well? A complete NFL season.
Yeah, contact.
The amount of physical abuse and punishment you take.
Right.
It's going to be on a wildly different level. And then the other part of it, too, is even when you're playing defense in the NFL versus in college, there is a lot more man. And the guys that you're covering while also playing way more man, it's way more physically taxing,
dude,
than what he had to do in college.
Yes.
So I'm not saying it can't be done. I don't think even the magnificent Gladstone understands just how huge an ordeal it would be for him to play meaningful snaps on both sides of the ball every game.
Think of I'm going back to this graphic that we started this whole segment with, which was the FanDuel more than 1,250 yards receiving. The eight names on this graphic. Okay, now think about covering these eight guys and what they represent. Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Puka's a little on the smaller side. That's why he was a fifth-round pick. But then CeeDee Lamb, Nico Collins, Brian Thomas Jr., A.J. Brown, and Malik Nabers. Like, that is an army of tanks that move at warp speed. You know, like, those are big, big physical dudes, man. You're absolutely right. Texter also says,
I've got an image of, like, because he's 6'1", 185, Travis Hunter is, which feels like Kevin Johnson type of body. And remember Kevin Johnson, when he would fly in like a missile and injure himself about once every six games?
He wasn't scared.
I could see that. That's what it feels like a little bit with him playing defense after, by the way, having just finished a 12-play offensive series.
Yeah, as long as they don't put Hunter in goal line on the O-line like we did with Tank Dell.
Tip of the spear.
Yeah. he was in goal line situations. I don't know that the team wanted him to run down.
It's not a matter of not being on goal line situations. Yeah. It's just throwing him right there into the thick of things.
Yeah, yep. So the CBSSports.com has a piece where they're naming the one player for each team who's getting a contract extension pretty soon. And it's no surprise who the Texans' entry is. It's C.J. Stroud. That'll be next year, as long as the two sides can come to an agreement. I think if he has a big year, I think he'll be the one to reset the market. You know, if Dak is still the one at $60 million a year, I think C.J. will get $60.1 million a year, average annual value. I think it'll be like a three-year deal that's almost fully guaranteed, like they did with Stingley, just with more money, like they did with Danielle Hunter, just with more money. I think this is how the Texans like to do it, and I think CJ would be up for something like that. He'd be a free agent again at age 27.
Yeah.
Think about that. CJ would be going and getting a third contract before the age where a lot of guys even get their second contract. So I think that's what's going to happen with CJ when it's all said and done.
It would have to take something cataclysmic. And I don't think it would be a huge, huge surprise. And given the way that Nick Caserio has operated, where they're not afraid at all to extend a guy after his third year when he's not a quarterback, I'd be really surprised if he doesn't
have
an
extension. They've done it three times now. They did it with Nico. They did it with Jalen Petrie. and they did it with Derek Stingley Jr.
Yeah, and they, with a lot of their veterans, they've renegotiated and been aggressive and given them new deals. So it just stands in line with everything the league is doing, but then the Texans especially are pretty proactive about this. And I think that, yeah, I think it'll be over $60 million a year, and it'll include a huge chunk of guaranteed money. Yep. That's going to be the eye-popping thing, is how much guaranteed money there is.
I think if it's 3 years, I think that thing, I think it'll be like Danielle Hunter, where it's all but $1 million, and Stingley too, where it's like all but $1 million is guaranteed. You know,
yeah.
Like, I don't know why they leave that extra million out there, but they do. They did it with both of those guys. So he's on this list. Kyle Hamilton is on this list. That kind of hurts to see. He's the Ravens, and he could sign a contract tomorrow. He's been in the league 3 years now, like Stingley. The Jags are in an interesting position right now where they picked number one overall in the draft 2 years in a row. In 2021, they took Trevor Lawrence. They paid him, and I think that's still a contract that a lot of people have questions about. And now Trayvon Walker is up for a deal, and he's a little like Trevor Lawrence, Seth, where he's had his moments. He had 10.5 sacks this past year, so he's been a good player.
Yeah.
But as a former number one overall pick, like, what are they going to do?
Yeah,
with Trayvon
I think he's played better, and he's had kind of a jagged path to it. It hasn't been a steady ascension the same way it has been with Will Anderson.
Yeah.
But he's produced, and I think he was really raw when he came out of college. He was a lot like Will Anderson in the prospects profile of just, man, really physically impressive, but very unpolished as a pass rusher. He's not as good as Will Anderson, but I think mostly with him, it's more about, okay, he hasn't lived up to being taken that high.
Yeah.
Trayvon Walker hasn't. And yet he's still a productive football player.
Yeah.
So, he's not as much of a slam dunk as Will Anderson, but I won't be surprised if they give him a contract.
I think he'll get a contract too. I wonder what it looks like. You know, I wonder if he's going to be trying to angle to get that high edge rusher money, even though he hasn't performed to the level of those guys. Like, I just wonder what Trayvon Walker sees himself as worth, or if he's into betting on himself. Like, you know what? I put up another good year. If I go from 10.5 sacks to 14 sacks, I'll get an even bigger deal a year from now. So, I mean, they don't have to do anything for another couple of years. He's got a fifth-year option in a couple of years. So, Bryce Young made this list. Yeah. How you doing, Bryce? You made the list of possible second contracts. That unto itself is progress.
That was probably one of the things that was just people were reluctant to accept it or didn't want to, but also because it was happening in Carolina was, okay, Bryce Young got benched and it looked like it was the right thing for him. And he came back and it was a different Bryce Young after he had that stint on the bench. And that now you start to look at, okay, what are the potential upsides of all of this?
Mm-hmm.
He'll be in his second year with his new coach and coordinator.
Yeah.
So just it's almost like a sophomore, all the things that could happen to a sophomore quarterback will be for him this year because it's his second year with a coordinator.
I'm at the point now with Bryce Young where I'm kind of rooting for him. I wasn't before just because I wanted CJ to be the right guy. Like, I didn't want to. I wanted Bryce Young back in that draft. I was mad that the Texans weren't picking first because I wanted Bryce Young. I wanted to be wrong once they got CJ Stroud, obviously. Now I'm at a point now, it's like, all right, well, CJ's going to be good. Don't really have to worry about the comparison between the two anymore. They're not going to play each other for another couple of years. So I'm cool with Bryce Young, except then we might need to find that audio at some point of Anish Shroff, the play-by-play guy for the Panthers, talking right before Bryce Young's first snap. You don't have to do it right now, Ben. But the part where he's like, seraphims glow, eyes as wide as the Sphinx. That might get me appropriately agitated about Bryce Young again and have me rooting against him just because of Anish Shroff touting him. Eyes as wide as the Sphinx. Shut the hell up. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Text message, Aziz is going to knock Travis the F out in the game. He may. Travis decides to run through that. That kill zone.
If Trevor Lawrence doesn't, Travis, yeah. No, well, okay, now this is the problem. This is where it falls short a little bit. Linebackers last year, sketchy in coverage. They got to be better in coverage.
Yeah.
Aziz was playing injured, but also he had a chance to lay Travis Kelce, old man Kelce, out in that Chiefs game. Wasn't happening.
Nope.
Travis Kelce was barreling through people like he was in his prime.
Sure was.
The linebackers in pass coverage And especially whether it's on crossing routes or covering tight ends or anything else like that, they've got to step it up a notch this year. Aziz Alshire is what he is in coverage. The other guys, like Christian Harris especially, I think they have untapped potential in pass coverage, and hopefully that's what we see out of Christian Harris this year.
Yep. Keep texting in 713-572-4610. Rafael Stone sat down with Vanessa Richardson. I think gives another indicator as to how this offseason is going to go, and it may be disappointing for a lot of you. See if you're reading into it what I'm reading into it and listening to it. We'll have that audio for you coming up next.
Trip Taco just $2.99. Comes with a big Q, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose. For $2.99, you really can't lose. Taco to go, taco to. This deal legit. Taco to go, taco. Only at Quick Trip. Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go. $2.99.
Oh, yeah, good point, Texter. CJ Gardner-Johnson might be the better candidate to lay the wood to Travis Hunter. That's true.
Yeah,
somewhere in that medium to deep area of the field, right there in center field. Blammo, splat. Yes,
that's gonna be fun, man. I'm really looking forward to that. They've got some big names in those first few games. The first part of the schedule laid out about exactly as I would have hoped, and I think with those first five games before the bye week, you finish with the Ravens, you culminate with a team that has been a real issue for you ever since CJ Stroud was the starter. And I think we'll have a pretty good feel for exactly where the Texans stand after five games.
I think it's the perfect mix of teams that are a good challenge that you're on the same level as, teams that you should beat, and both of them in the division, and then the Baltimore Ravens, which, to your point, you culminate that five-game stretch before the bye week with the biggest challenge out of all of them. With the team that I still think, if they're playing their A game, at least in the AFC, you know, maybe the Eagles, it's a higher A game for the Eagles than the Ravens. But in the AFC, I still think the A game of the Ravens scares me more than any other team's A game. You know what I mean? Like, they're best when you got Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson cooking, and that defense, and they've added to that defense this offseason, you know.
I like, man, if the defense gets off to a hot start and they go into Jacksonville again next year, and which was where Trevor Lawrence got injured, but that if they just get Trevor Lawrence looking like a frazzled rookie, that would be so much fun.
It'd be great.
That would really, like, with a brand new coach, brand new GM, brand new, you know, got generational talent at wide receiver / defensive back in Travis Hunter.
Yeah.
That could end up being awesome. Or we could come in the next day wondering what life is all about.
Yeah, it could go either way, man. It could go either way. But I think you got Rams, Bucks in the first two games. I think you're on the same – those teams are on the same tier as the Texans. Those are coin flip games. And then you got the two division games, the Jags and the Titans, that I think they'll be favored in both of those games, and then the Ravens, which I think they're going to be a touchdown underdog, and let's finally go beat the Ravens in Baltimore. Let's go. All right, the Rockets. The Rockets, like 26 other NBA teams, kind of sitting back and watching these conference finals. Rafael Stone did a sit-down with Vanessa Richardson, who we had on the show last week. She had mentioned she'd done interviews with Ime Udoka and Rafael Stone. Those have dropped online. Here was Rafael Stone getting asked about chasing a superstar via trade this offseason.
Versus getting a superstar. I'm not going to ask you what you're going to do because I know that you wouldn't tell me, but what factors play into that decision?
Well, the superstar thing is, like, it's largely, in the NBA, it's largely points, which is at least as much, points are a factor of who shoots. Some of that is, like, offense driven. So it ends up being cyclical. Like, you know, if you engineer your offense around one player, they're going to score more. They're going to get more assists. I don't think that's in Ime's DNA. Mm. So some of this is like just how we're going to go about it. I think we're going to be a team-focused team. That doesn't mean we won't do a trade for a really talented player. But I also think we have really, really talented players on this roster. And I think they're all improving. And so before we trade one or two or three or four of those guys for a more veteran guy, we want to make sure that we give this current group room to grow. the huge caveat to all of that is the job is to win championships. That is my one and only goal. And if we think there's a better path than continuity, we would pursue it. But right now, that bar is pretty high.
Yeah, I still don't think a big trade's coming this offseason.
I didn't know. I think as he's laying it out there and talking about how Udoka is kind of wired, and you think about the influence of Popovich on Udoka and how good those Spurs teams were, where I think it's not like the problem with the Spurs is that they played like a team that had no superstars, and yet they had several superstars. That's the sweet spot, is that you play like a team that's like, okay, what was the knock on the Spurs? So it's, oh, they're boring, they're bland, they're this. Yeah, it's freaking Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
It's all these guys that...
Four of them are going to wind up in the Hall of Fame.
Right,
that kind of thing. Yeah.
Like, they're still superstars. They might just not have the classic, you know, superstar vibe.
Yep.
But they played very good team basketball. And that's where you can get, when you get the absolute most out of guys, where, again, greater than the sum of all its parts. All right, when you get guys playing as a group and you get the absolute most out of Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün, then you have a guy like Ginobili who ends up being much better than he might have been on any other team.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing in that cut there to me was where Rafael Stone said that it's not in Ime's DNA. And I think just in terms of what we've been used to with the Rockets for the last, 15 years, when Daryl Morey was the GM, I think this was a very GM-driven team. Yeah. You know, I think Daryl's quest for a big three and for superstar, doing all the things that Ime Udoka or that Rafael Stone's talking about not doing in that clip, those are the things that Daryl's been doing here and in Philly and chasing. I think it was a GM-driven team. I think similar to the Texans, the Rockets are a very head coach-driven team. I think Rafael Stone's MO, his default, is to look at what exactly it is Ime Udoka looks for in players and serve him, the same way Nick Caserio openly says that D'Amico's got a certain type of guy he looks for and certain types of players he looks for, and his job is to serve D'Amico Ryans. I think it's a very similar structure and vibe with both of those teams right now, up to and including what the two head coaches are actually all about. Not just the GM serving what they're looking for, but I think what they are looking for, the two head coaches, is very similar within their respective sports.
Well, with Morey, Morey was very open about it. He didn't like to overthink the whole structure of everything. Just get as many good basketball players on the roster as possible.
That's not so this.
Chris Paul's a ball-dominant point guard. No big deal. We've already got one of those. All right, yeah, bring him on. And with Morey, I guess because I really admired a lot of the stuff that Morey did. The one thing I always worried about is with anybody who's really analytically driven, how much are you just specifically chasing stats instead of creating the structure that yields the stats? And you would see that with the Rockets from one year to the next, it was just a revolving door of personnel.
Yeah.
And you didn't really have that same level of consistency with your role players and your secondary players to where you could have any kind of a real theme or feel or purpose or like what's your core ethos to that team. When you're constantly chasing the stats instead of chasing the things that yield the stats, I think that's where perhaps there was a disconnect. And I think Rafael Stone is much more, it seems, geared towards, yes, having the analytical side to things, but really get the substance right first, and then the analytics take care of themselves.
Yeah, that's 100%. And Rafael Stone kind of said it in his own way at the beginning of that clip. He's like, yeah, well, chasing a superstar, we're really talking about points here, right?
Right,
we're really talking about points.
It's tempting. I mean, with Morey, the way he'd look at it is just the sheer math of a deluge of threes and what it can do for you. The thing that I worry about in basketball is that sometimes the statisticians themselves don't seem to recognize the difference between a single regular season game and a 7-game playoff series. That it's a lot of those statistical advantages really start to wash up when a team gets 7 games to figure out how you're operating.
Good head coaches make adjustments. Definitely. No, that's absolutely the case. The danger here is pretty simple. It's like, okay, are the Rockets falling in love with their own young players too much? You know, that's the danger in all this, is that they're all improving to their own degrees here. You know, I think they've all got different ceilings. Like, I don't think the ceiling for Jabari Smith and Tari Eason is the same as the ceiling for Amen Thompson and Alperen Şengün. And probably Jalen Green probably has a really high ceiling, and then I'm clouded by what happened in the playoffs with Jalen Green a little bit, but he's got a higher ceiling than those guys. But they're all, I think all of them, and maybe even including Cam Whitmore if he gets into the right situation, they've all got elements of being very productive longtime NBA players. The question is this mix of players enough to win a championship at some point? And because at some point, somebody does need to take the reins. It can't just be five good players out there. There needs to be greatness. I mean, all these teams that are still standing all have at least one great player on their team. You know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is a great player. Anthony Edwards is a great player. Jalen Brunson, I think, is a great player. I think that Tyrese Halliburton is a great player. I know people debate the level of superstardom those guys are. They are elite NBA players by today's standards right now. I don't know, you know, like Amen Thompson is approaching that, but he needs to refine his offensive game. Şengün is getting there. Jalen Green took a step back maybe in the postseason. They're all inching towards that right now, but do you fall in love with your guys too much? Can one or two of them get to that level?
And then with Jalen Green, I think as long as I relinquish my hopes for him to become a genuine superstar, as long as I'm at peace with that, I can handle and I can foresee where he can be better in the playoffs and what have you. It's just even a, like, when I try to make excuses for him, and I'll go to Jalen Williams. Jalen Williams has had a lot of criticism for not being as good in the playoffs. He's had a lot more, many more playoff games and maybe still the same total number of single digit outputs. No, still fewer. There's only one game where he scored in the single digits.
Yeah.
Whereas like Jalen Green, that was his bread and butter this year.
It's catastrophic.
It was that bad. Okay, great. They're blitzing him. They're doubling him. All that. That's great, but you still got to figure out a way to put up double digit points when you're one of the team's best players.
Guess who produces when he gets blitzed and doubled? Every good player. You know, they produce it better
than
single
happens.
Digits.
Yeah, that's how they establish all the pass rushers in the NFL. They get double digit sacks every year. Yeah, they get double teamed a lot.
That's what makes
them great, is that they figure out a way to overcome it.
All right, Pettycast, we've got the petties for this week. Start texting in 713-572-4610. What are you feeling petty about? We will have what we are feeling petty about, and also some good petties from some people out there in the sports world. We do the Tuesday Pettycast coming up next.
Taco to go, taco to,
and a big cue.
Taco to go, taco to go.
We just review.
Quick Trip Taco, just $2.99. Comes with a big cue, this deal so fine. Brisket breakfast, so much to choose for $2.99. You really can't lose.
Taco to go, taco to,
this deal legit.
Taco to
only at Quick Trip.
Taco to go, taco to go, taco to go, $2.99.
Taco to go.